Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is episode number 17 of the Midlife Crisis podcast here at Chop Sports in Manawan, New Jersey. Dave Sturcio is always helping me out here. Feel free to look out Fight Factory. He's got a lot of interesting stuff going on there. All the front row seats are sold out to his event on July 16th. So if you're a wrestling fan, you know, please check it out. Tickets are going fast. My next guest is a player at St. John's, past player, past captain, past champion. He was on the NIT team that gave St. John's their most recent championship. And also he had a little cup of coffee with the Bulls, played freshman year, went down to freshman year in North Carolina. Interesting story. And of course, we bring up our old friend Alibaba. And this gentleman talks a little bit about Alibaba and the practices. So it's my pleasure to introduce you, Matt Brust from St. John's University. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, I know we've been going back and forth. And, you know, I guess the reason I reached out to you is, well, first, I'm from Elizabeth. Alibaba was a big name back then. So I guess we'll get to him later on. But, you know, in the 80s, I had very vivid memories of St. John's winning NIT. And you being on the rim waving a towel, and then I remember the announcer saying, "You know, he's going to have some future in the financial and working on Wall Street." So, I mean, I was a Big East fan. It was a good time for the Big East. But just if you just talk about maybe that team, and maybe you could talk about the current team. Like, talk about, you got a nice team on that roster. I mean, if you look at it, I don't know how Jim Boeheim got Jason Buchanan to come down to New York, but you guys had a nice team, that the team you won. And I guess that's Louis Carnesecca's only championship team. Am I correct in saying that?
His other championship, believe it or not, was the NIT. And it was in 1965, the year I was born.
Okay. Okay. So you're giving up your age.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing to hide here.
Yeah. So, but that season, I mean, that was 89. I mean, it's like that was when the Big East was the Big East, you know.
Yeah, it was before people decided to experiment with football and other sports and try to commingle and marry different conferences and so on and so forth, which was a shame because all the good work that Dave Gavitt did with Coach Carnesecca to put together such a powerful conference, why would you want to break it up? And to me, I think there are good teams in the conference, but it's strange. You just don't have the same feel as the Big East, the old Big East was.
Man, yeah, the rivalry. So you were the captain of that team. I guess you had obviously Jason Williams, Malik Sealy, Jason Buchanan, Robert Wardan, kind of a lot of New York flavor there. So it was a lot of local guys looking to stay. And, you know, Lou Carnesecca had Coach Hurley on, and he said St. John's, if they recruited New York and surrounding areas, they're going to be good. But now a lot of players are leaving. So,
well, Coach Carnesecca had a rule, and he, and I found this out years later, that he told his assistant coaches, Brian Mahoney and Ronnie Rutledge, he goes, if it's more than 50 miles and we can't drive it, forget it. They're no good.
So, but do you still keep in contact with Coach? I know he's 99, you know, he still goes to practice there. He's still involved with the university. He's still, you know, keep in contact with the, with Coach Carnesecca?
Oh, sure. I actually spoke to him maybe about 2 hours ago. I usually give him a call once a week to check up on him, and he's doing very, very well. He he made a joke to me in typical Coach Carnesecca fashion. He said, "Let me tell you something." He goes, "I have 13 doctors." He goes, "What do they think? I'm going to live forever?"
It's great. But just talk a little bit about yourself. You grew up in Babylon. Your brother played at Miami when Miami baseball was you know, right, king, and they pitched in the College World Series. And then you also had your brother play at North Carolina, and you end up going to North Carolina. Like, how, you know, just your family, and you said your sister was probably the best athlete out of all. So you got great genes, but like, your brother, was he good in basketball, or was it like you guys were like played football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and baseball in the spring? Were you kind of like the typical three-sport athlete at the time?
Yeah, the high school we went to, with the exception of my eldest brother, Jerry, we went to Babylon High School in Long Island, and it's has a graduating class of 120 kids.
Oh, wow.
On a yearly basis. So yeah, we were three sport athletes. My oldest brother went to St. John the Baptist High School, which was in West Islip, which was the next town. And, he was originally a basketball player. But then, decided to play baseball, and lo and behold, he went to the University of Miami and ended up doing very, very well. I think to this day, he holds the record for most consecutive wins. I think he went like 18-0 before they like drafted him. He was great. He was, he was 6'7" and, through sidearm, 95 miles an hour. I mean, talking about diving out of the box. In those days he played with guys like Corny Lansford, Roy Smalley, the guys of that era, and Joe Madden was best man at his wedding. And his
no kidding. So
So unfortunately, he was playing in Double A and with Cal, was at the time the California Angels, and went into an extra inning game. And Buck Rogers was his coach, ran him out there 2 a.m. and ended up tearing his rotator cuff. And in the 70s, it was, you were done.
Yeah, right?
There was nothing you could do. But that was kind of his sports life. And he did pitch in the College World Series. They did lose to Florida State, unfortunately, but he had two wins in that. My brother Chris went to Carolina. He was 6'9", coming out of Babylon, had some skills. Coach Smith picked him up. He was pretty much recruited everywhere, and ended up going to Carolina. Was a bench player, won a national title in 82. That's when Michael hit that big shot. He had a great experience for that he enjoyed down there. As far as I was concerned, look, when you're 18 years old and if North Carolina calls you up, you say yes. I mean, you don't really think too much. And so I did just that. I ended up going down there, was there about 6-7 months, played pretty well and as best I could, but I really was kind of a homesick New Yorker. So at the time, I had talked to Coach Smith and I told him I wanted to go back home to New York, and I called St. John's and he intimated to me that they probably don't want you because they wouldn't want you because they're ranked number one, which at the time they were. Yeah. And I said, well, listen, if I'm going to sit on a bench, half my family's from Flushing and Queens, and anyway, so I'm going to do it, by my mom. And I ended up, I called up Coach Carnesecca and he said, how soon can you get here? And I had a great, great run at St. John's.
And were you on the 87 team? You missed the Final Four team? Were you on?
I was redshirted the 85 team.
85 team, 87, I'm thinking probably. Yeah. 85 team, yeah.
Yeah, it was 85.
Yeah.
I would have been if I would have went straight there in the first place, but no, but I did redshirt. And in those days, obviously redshirts, you had to sit out at least a year, which unfortunately has changed today. I just don't know how kids, as soon as they have deal with adversity, they have an out. Coach tells you, run down the court or barks at you, which is natural in athletics. They're like, the heck with you, I'm out of here. And it's metastasized into something really, really crazy. So those days you had to use your mind and think about what it is that you wanted before you made such a monumental decision. And I was grateful that I made the right one.
And also, I mean, now it's just like the money that's in the game now. And then, you know, you have kids that commit and then all of a sudden they don't, this player stays. So I'm going to decommit. I'm going to go somewhere else. So,
but yeah, it's really a shame what's gone on. You know, I'm all for players, you know, their image and likeness and all that stuff being used by the universities and, the amount of money that they make. I'm all for players getting something. You are getting an education. Unfortunately, that's kind of looked down upon, which is a shame. But you're getting an education. But I think in a fair sort of profit-sharing arrangement would be best. That way, everyone kind of gets the same. And then, you know, whatever your NIL deal is your deal. But if schools are paying, you know, different amounts for different players, you know, obviously the biggest universities are going to get the top players.
Yeah. And then they have all these collectives. But what about this season? You think it was a good idea for St. John's to opt out of NIT? I mean, you end up winning it your senior year. You're the captain. Do you think it was a good idea? Or think, you know, other forces, you know, this week, a lot of players went to the portal. You think that kind of had something to do? I mean, it's Patino's first year. I know he kind of gotten late, but what's your opinion, you know, having winning that championship or and then, you know, seeing your alma mater kind of opt out of it?
To be honest with you, I was disappointed. Historically, St. John's was one of the, I think we have the most NIT championships, and we were one of the way back, we're one of the originators and builders of the NIT tournament. And it used to be the big thing. When we had missed the NCAA my last year, you know, we didn't think twice about it. A couple of guys moaned and groaned a little bit about it, but you know, it was a chance to play more. And as a senior, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen to me next. I just think that, you know, it's kind of a slap in the face to the NIT. And I'm disappointed that Rick didn't go. I'm sure he has his reasons. I'm not intimate with what he's doing, and I understand that the portal and all this other nonsense. I think the players are there regardless, but look, you're building a team, you know, why not play more games? You know, if you're trying to, I mean, you know, when you build a team from nothing, which he did a magnificent job doing, putting players together, why not play more? Get more exposure. I mean, how could that hurt you? You know, I just think that these institutions, the NIT, the NCAA, they're sort of like these faceless institutions, and really what they say goes. There's very little appeal, and the last thing you want to do is anger anybody in these organizations. I mean, unless you have an issue that you should be fighting, but I just didn't think it was a good idea. And historically, St. John's has been a stalwart of the NIT, and maybe that's just something that slipped Rick's mind or the, you know, what's going on at St. John's. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure, like you said, sure he has his reasons. But the season, your tournament with the NIT, I mean, I look back at it, like he had a nice team, like what was, just take me through that season. Your senior year, your captain, I guess you were co-captain, there was another captain, but you know, just take me through that year. I mean, still Big East, I think I don't know how much of a bench yet, but you still had talent there. It was still a very, very solid team. So
we had a young team. We lost a number of guys the year before. And we had Rob Werdan come in, Malik Seely, and you said Jason Buchanan, a number of other kids were there, inexperienced. We had, it was a baptism of a year. We ended up something like 15 and 14. I don't remember our exact season record, but it was a lot. And we had Jason Williams, of course, who carried us season, and myself. Our bench was okay. And then we just got to the NIT, and like any postseason tournament in any sport, it's whoever gets hot. And we got hot, and we played some tough teams. I mean, we beat Ohio State out at Ohio State. There was a lot of games that we kind of surprised ourselves.
Yeah. Well, listen, it was great. It was a great time for the Big East. And then, I think that's your Seton Hall made to the final game. So it's just like, that was like the, encapsulating like the 80s that like really, you talk of ESPN, Big Monday on all these games, and you saw that. So, but how special is that to coach that championship? You know, that was kind of his last, like crack at it. I think after that, Brendan Mahoney took over a couple years after. How special was that championship to him?
Well, he's always been filled with humility and gratitude, and just to be able to give him that gift, I guess, from us was, for me, it was very, very special to bring him that joy because of what he did for me. I came out of Long Island. I was a top prospect and went to the wrong place, and it just did not work out for me at Carolina. And he didn't even think twice and took me in. He was more of a father figure than a coach. And it's interesting. I'm always asked, as I played, for Coach Smith, Coach Garnaseca, Phil Jackson, when I had a short stint with Chicago, and I did have a little bit of taste of Bobby Knight in the summer.
that was probably enough, right?
I really like Bob Knight because, I would, people would ask me about Coach Smith and Bob Knight, and what were the subtle differences? And I said, there's one difference. I said, Coach Smith knows how to act in public. Coach Knight doesn't. But being who I was, the type of player I was, I appreciated someone like Bob Knight because you knew what you were getting.
Yeah.
He didn't pull any punches. Coach Smith was very cerebral and probably way over my head at the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to delve into the story too much. I know there's a famous story of you and Michael Jordan, but I guess the most shocking thing, you were an intense player. You definitely enforced your will on players. I'm surprised that they gave you the thumbs up to not to protect them, but just go, right at them as far as, play your game, that they didn't say, sometimes you hear like, oh, this person's not supposed to be touched. It's supposed to be. I'm surprised when you had your cup of coffee with the Chicago Bulls, they said, go play your game. And they just, unleashed. I was really surprised that, when I heard in another interview that's how they told you.
Well, it was exactly what they wanted me to do. They had come into New York and they were playing. It was the years where Chicago, they kept getting beat up by the Pistons, and we all know how they barely use that club. Well, we got 15 fouls. I'm going to use them all on Michael. And Doug Collins, who was coach for Phil, he's a good coach, but he said, give the ball to Michael and get the hell out of the way was his kind of mantra. And you can't do that for 80 games. You can't even do it for 30 games in college. And by the time they got to the playoffs, Michael was pretty much beat up, and Scottie Pippen was young and coming along, and they were missing a few pieces, but they had come into New York. Coach Garnaseca said, Jerry Krause wanted to meet me in New York City. They were playing the Knicks, and I said, who the hell is Jerry Krause? And he said, you'll find out. So I thought it was a front office job, I thought this would be great. So I found an old briefcase and emptied it and carried it. So I got to look the part, So I walked into a meeting with Jerry Krause, Tex Winter, and Phil Jackson, and they asked me, what's in the briefcase?
Yeah.
They kind of called me out. I said, well, so, I'm here for the front office job. And they just said, you don't understand. We want you to come in, try out for the club. And I'm like, okay, you guys are like on the verge of being the best team. I'm curious. And they talked about Michael, and they knew, I knew Michael since he was 19 from my so I had really no, and when I was at St. John's, I was the defensive specialist. I took on the toughest defensive assignment. Reggie Williams, God, I'm thinking my mind's all over the place. That was kind of my role. So I got to camp, and there was 300 guys there trying out for two positions.
Oh my God.
And jeez. Yeah, and it was a 3-day sort of, you know, tryout. I ended up making that, playing the summer, making that, and then, you know, Michael, you know, was there, and whoever stood in front of him, they would just kind of melt. But when he played, when I played him, you know, and he knew me, and I knew him, and I had nothing to lose, and I wasn't about to change my game. And that's what they wanted me to do. They said, basically, we need him to be stronger. You know, we want you to do that. And so, yeah, there was a couple incidents, but one incident has been still online for 30 plus years. It's a scary.
Well, listen, not too many people can say that, you know, can have that. So, I mean, listen, I think it's great, but I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a testament to the game. Now they have load management and everything else. It's just how that game has changed. But, you know, I mentioned a little bit before about Alibaba. I had a couple guests that, you know, he's kind of a behind the scenes guy, you know, went up with Bobby Knight, had a run at Fairleigh Dickinson. And then once he got let go of Fairleigh Dickinson, Lou Carnesecca, like you said, come on over, we need you. And then just talk a little bit about Coach Lababo and like his influence on St. John's and the team, because it's not really, you know, just being from where I'm from, people have heard of him, but not too many people outside in the basketball mainstream really kind of know who he is or what's he about.
Right. Al was our defensive coach, and he was exceptional. Al also had Mike Krzyzewski, a young Mike Krzyzewski. So Bobby and Mike got their defensive sets and philosophies from Al. Al was, you know, pretty much a firebrand. I mean, he just really taught us how to play defense and defend. And no matter who we put out on the court, if we stuck to the principles that he taught us, we pretty much had a chance to win on any particular night. But Al, when Coach Carnesecca had him, as the story went, the first year, you know, the coaches were all sat in the first 3-4 seats, and Al was constantly yelling. And he said, Al, he had to put Al at the end of the bench. Al was at the end of the bench, jumping up and down, and you know, and Coach said, I just can't have him next to me. It's too much. But Al was brilliant. He was very, very good to us. He's very, very good to me. And he has quite a legacy that's really unknown. And people in basketball circles know him. And I'm sure if you ask, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, and obviously can't ask Bobby anymore, but they very quickly give credit to Al and you know, his defensive strategies, which made them successful.
Yeah, I mean, and like growing up where I grew up in Elizabeth, he basically took St. Mary's, and Hubie Brown still considers him probably the best coach he ever in basketball. So that was his high school coach. So, you know, and the legacy lives on. But I mean, you know, and I know he was a character. He was like very well dressed. You know, it just seemed like he always had a bark, but like, you know, it really wasn't. It was a lot of bark, but there really wasn't too much substance. I guess the rumor is when Carnesecca had enough of you, he just kind of unleashed Lababo on you, and then he would just kind of like run you into the court, I guess. So,
well, we Al, you could kind of say that Al would in practice wander onto the court. And, you know, as we're running our drills and doing our defensive sets and offensive sets, transition and things like that. And Al had, unfortunately, earlier on, he had had throat cancer, which he had gotten taken care of, but he lost a lot of his voice. So it was very raspy. So he, you know, physically would walk onto the court, and Al, you know, all wet, weighed about 115 pounds. I mean, yeah. You know, very, very, very thin. And I was talking about this with Coach Karnaseca 2 weeks ago. And he said, "You guys remember when you almost killed that damn guy?" And I said, I said, "I knew you were going to bring that up." And what had happened was Al was in my ear and telling me, you got to get back. And then I turned my head, and we were running a transition drill, and he walked in front of me, and I didn't see him. Oh, so I had about 1, 2, 3 good strides, and I literally lifted him off the ground. I hit him.
Oh, my God.
And he flew through the air, literally about 3 feet, and landed. And just, I said, "Oh, my God, he's dead." And and he bounced up off the floor. Tough Sicilian, and all I knew was, I said, "My God, I have to make amends to this guy, or else he's gonna put some Sicilian hex on me."
Put them on loiter. You know,
he was fine, didn't break any bones, and you know, we still talk about that to this day. But he was very instrumental in setting up defenses and doing things, and everything was done in the practice session where he was most vocal.
Yeah, and then just turn a little bit to yourself after, you know, it didn't work out with the Bulls. What did you end up going into the finance world? And then that, I guess now you're coaching, I guess, high school. I mean, we were going back and forth during the season, but you were like, so just tell me where you are now in your life and like what happened after, you know, that stint with the Bulls.
Well, I had always, the beauty of St. John's was the notoriety that you got. Our home court was Madison Square Garden. And after I had transferred from Carolina, it was a bit of a wake-up call that it was a possibility that I was not going to be Larry Bird, you know. And so I had to figure out academically what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to just get a degree in something that I couldn't use. So I did go into finance and decided to go down to Wall Street, and got involved in stock brokerage industry. I was a money manager, and it was actually a good field for me to go into because it was extremely competitive. You won, you lost. You had to come back. So my skill set in athletics dovetailed kind of nicely into the finance world. So I did that for 25, 30 years and still kind of have my hands in that. I started getting into coaching 6, 7 years ago on a dare from my daughter. she was going to Greenwich High School, and she came home and she said, "You know, Dad, there's an assistant coaching position, and you know, you're kind of hanging around the house." I'm like, this is when I went remote before remote was possible.
Yeah.
And everything was so streamlined, I could work from my phone virtually. So it's, I'm not sure who put her up to that, but she was like, "You know, don't you think that'd be fun?" I was like, I said, "Oh, they don't know who I am." Everybody, I said, I don't know. I'll try it. And lo and behold, they called me up and they said, "We thought this was like a joke." And I said, "No." So I got the coaching bug and coached a couple of years there. They had turned over their athletic department. And then I ended up coaching girls at a school called the Ursuline School in New Rochelle. Yeah.
Yep.
I was a JV coach there, and I worked with Beth Wooters, who was, basically a legend there. She's been there 39 years. So I had a wonderful experience coaching the girls there, and then got an opportunity to coach boys varsity. And that's kind of where I am right now at Oyster Bay High School in Long Island.
And you're you're around Connecticut, or are you back on the island, or how's that working?
I'm living in Stanford right now. My daughters are up here. So it's not bad. It's kind of a 50-mile drive, but when you're coaching, you do need to cool off.
I guess you'd be. That's one thing they said about COVID. Like, people working from home, like, nobody really had that time to decompress, like, after work, or like, you know, or think about stuff like the, you know, the creativity. So that's one thing about COVID. But, you know, NIL, I know, like, Wojnarowski's in a collective with his alma mater, St. Bonaventure, they opted out of NIL, NIT. But you ever, did St. John's ever approach you about their collective? I mean, being successful on that side of the fence, like, did they ever, or that's something you would be considering doing? I mean, I guess it's kind of hard figuring out somebody's worth for a team, you know, like, what's a human being worth for a team? So it's just like, is that something you could see yourself going into?
I believe I would do well doing something like that. I think, you know, there's been a lot of turnover at St. John's over the past 25 years. With Rick, Rick's definitely got a full staff. But I really enjoy the coaching and training the kids, and of course my specialty is the defense. And no matter how much they screw with the game on every level, teams that play defense usually win it all. But I would certainly enjoy that. It's interesting being a player and a coach, and I can see where there were a lot of very, very good players and great players tried to coach, and it didn't work out. There's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of prep work that goes into it. And you're dealing with a lot of egos. And if you have that kind of psychiatric mindset, I mean, Phil Jackson was brilliant at that. You know, he didn't try to overpower people. He just was a psychiatrist.
And kind of let them be who they were, you know.
He read the room, did that probably better than anybody. And he got Michael on board very quickly. And Michael, basically, if anyone did anything, bench or otherwise, and Michael would go after you. I remember Pete Myers came off the court once and was pulled out of a game and kind of barked at Phil. And I saw Michael just run down the bench at him, screaming at him. Like, don't talk to him that way. So, you know, he empowered Phil. And, of course, they ran the triangle offense, which Tex put in, and all those guys were well-respected. And that's what happens when you're professional. They went on. They're probably one of the best teams ever assembled.
And also St. John's alumni was on that. Bill Winnington, I think he's announcing for them now, right? Red Timber. He was from Canada. How did Carnesecca? I guess he didn't recruit him. I don't know if
Billy came from Canada and he played at Long Island Lutheran High School.
That's in the 50-mile radius. All right, but I don't want to take too much of your time, Matt. And like, thanks for being considerate with me. I know we're going back a long way, but I just, you know, like I said, memory of you with the NIT, I wish this interview was a little bit different. That St. John's getting ready for the NCAA tournament, but you know, it's March Madness for a reason. But who do you like in a tournament, and like who do you see kind of taking it home? If I could just leave it with that,
I think it's going to come down to probably Purdue and UConn. Danny Hurley's got I watched them play St. John's, and St. John's really hit them. They probably played their best game of the year, and they just were extremely cool and under fire. I mean, it was close. It was 2 points here and there, and they just never lost their composure. And they just systematically played team basketball. They find the open player, doesn't matter who scores. They've got a bunch of different weapons, but there were no individuals on that club. So they're going to be a tough team to beat. I'd love to see Purdue use Zach Edey a little bit more. I mean, I know the guy he does score a lot. Hopefully in the tournament, you know, they'll play inside out. I think when you throw the ball down to a big guy like that, who's a threat, you know, the perimeter opens up. So you're not taking Steph Curry, 3-point shots.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like if they can put it together, you know, that'll be a fun game to watch. But I think it'll come to them. I think UConn ultimately will do it. That's, you know, but it's anybody's guess.
I mean, you know, who knows? Like, my favorite saying was Bill Parcells says, you know, sometimes God has a say in the games. You know, you could be prepared, you get thinking, but the next thing you know, it just doesn't go your way. So, but, you know, I mean, listen, growing up in New Jersey, I saw all the Hurleys play in Poppin. So, I mean, he's got probably one of the greatest coaching minds, you know, sitting right behind him. So he can, and then they're tough, they're deep, they're guard play, you know, it's just, you know, they're big, and you know, so, but I like to see Matt Painter. I mean, after last year getting stung a little bit, Matt Painter's a good coach. Purdue is, you know, they had good teams, but I mean, you know, it's just, you know, let's see, any dark horses out there, any teams that say nobody's talking about that might make a run, or?
I think Carolina could sneak up on people. You know, I know they had, you know, they're torn, they lost to State. But I think they could, you know, they could sneak up on people. But there's so many teams that, out there that, you know, Illinois. There's probably about 7 or 8 teams.
It's just
who gets hot, and you'll know after the second round who's hot.
You know,
if teams are surviving, that doesn't mean they're hot. They're out there and they're just beating teams, and the energy's there. You know, it's a marathon now. I mean, you know, when my day it was 32 teams, 64, 68, pretty soon it's going to be 128. And you know, the revenues. Well, it's all about the revenues.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, Matt, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. And like I said, sorry to be pain in the neck going back and forth. You know, you're probably dealing with Millsy. So, but I really appreciate the time. I really appreciate, you know, walking back to St. John's that time, and especially talking about Coach LaBable. So, like I said, it's like growing up where I grew up, like you always hear his name, but like just to hear it from people, like, you know, it really is entertaining to hear, especially like, you know, there's really no characters in basketball like there used to be anymore, like that. Yeah, it's just like they're few and far between. Everything's kind of behind the scenes. So
it sure is. But I'm grateful that you had me on the show, and good luck with it, and I appreciate being here.
All right, thanks, Matt, and be well, and you know, see what the tournament brings, and see what next year brings to St. John. So, but
all right,
thanks for your time. Take care. I'd like to thank Matt for his time and his perspective on St. John's, Coach Cornaseca, Coach LaBable, his career, and his post-career, and a lot of interesting stories. We were going back and forth on email. He was coaching girls basketball, so, you know, our timing wasn't great, so I'm glad he had opportunity around tournament time and talk a little bit about the tournament. So feel free to like and subscribe this episode. Also look for future episodes, basketball specific, coming right away.